Hello, Sunsounds listeners. This is Andy Bomick, which means, once again, it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with a novel that I've been reading now close to 6 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. But first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled All Different Now, Juneteenth, The First Day of Freedom. And then it's Big and Small and In Between. The World is Ours to Cherish, A Letter to a Child. Kamala and Maya's Big Idea. To Find Treasure in the Mountains. And if we have time, I'll finish up the first half hour with The World is Awaiting You. So it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled All Different Now, Juneteenth, The First Day of Freedom. A June morning breeze off the port blew the smell of honeysuckle past the fields, across the yard, and into our room to wake us. And nobody knew, as we ate a little, talked a little, and headed to the fields as the sun was rising, that soon it would be all different. Then we worked and worked and worked some more under the hot Texas sun until word spread from the port to town, through the countryside and into the fields, that a Union general had read from a balcony that we were all now and forever free, and things would be all different now. I watched as my Aunt Laura sang, as she held her baby, Mr. Jake, who some say was 100, cried quietly. And a group of grown people bowed their heads and whispered things to each other I could not hear. My mama held my hand softly and looked beyond, as another breeze blew over and everything fell to a hush. But later, Papa, Mama, and the aunts and uncles, and all of my cousins, had an afternoon picnic by the water. My baby brother crawled under our blanket as we listened to the sounds of the waves. And as more people joined us, we ate as a free people, laughed as free people, and told stories as free people, on into the night. What was before would be no more. Big and small and in between. These are big things. The sun and its shine, when it asks you to rise. The donut that your brother got because you picked last and only got the whole. A pile of leaves after they've all been raked and before you jump. The trophy you got for the jump rope contest because your feet remembered the pattern. Those kids on the playground when you want to use the seesaw. And so you swing instead. These are other things that are big. The elephant's tea party and his stack of jam sandwiches and the chip in his teacup. A mess, even the accident kind, when there aren't enough rags to clean it up. How much bravery it takes to jump into the deep end without the floaty things on your arms. How quiet it gets when it's your turn on stage and you're not sure about your talent. The way the moon looks if you use a telescope and spin the fuzziness out. A bear and her mama and her pop and the hugs they probably give each other. The hole when you are done with the digging. The castle when it's finished. The way the ocean feels when it stands in front of you. And these are things that are in between. The dirt that knows the promise underneath, and the sunshine that's above. The teeter-totter, not when it's up or when it's down, but when two smiles meet in the middle. Your tooth, when it wiggles and waggles, but isn't all the way in or all the way out. In between what you are on your half birthday, not even or odd. The leftover balloons that are losing their oomph, but not all the way droopy. In between a boat below the sky and above the swell. The caterpillar that once was an egg, but will fly away soon. A handful of nickels that fell out of a pocket and got smooshed in the sofa. In between, the water that got dirty because it cleaned your brushes so you could make this. Those cozy socks that keep your feet warm and your shoes less smelly. When the marshmallow gets gooey and sticks to the graham cracker, and the chocolate and the other graham cracker. In between, the stars that make a picture in the middle of the night. When the outside and the inside of the hole are about the same, and the tide pulls your castle back to sea, and the ocean floats between you and another world. And these are small things. The baby blue promise in a robin's nest, and the bird beginning to sing, and the worm who wished he hadn't been seen. The plip of a raindrop, and the puddle where it falls, for a butterfly to sip. That's the seed that was stuck in the soil, and the carrot that didn't want to grow, and his shy green crown that tried anyway. Small, a snail, and her home, and the road she has traveled. Small, what's left of your fort after your mom says to clean up those pillows. The goldfish you love and his eyes that tell you he's a good listener. Small, the mouse's tea party and her Swiss cheese sandwiches and the chip in her teacup. The sun right before it slips away when it is going, gone. The bright lights that stick around after your sparkler stops fizzing. Small, the wishes you leave for the tooth fairy and the one you trade for a handful of coins. Small, the sliver of moon that sneaks in through the window, and the barely there breeze, and the dream dust it brings. The hole when you start to dig, the castle when you start to build, the way you feel when you stand in front of the ocean. Everything. The bluest sky, the biddiest bug, and you in the middle of it all. The world is ours to cherish, a letter to a child. There is magic all around you. You can see it when the sun rises in the morning. You can feel it when the rain falls from the clouds. There is magic in the way fish are born to swim and bees are born to fly. You are part of this magic, your smile, your laugh, your heartbeat. This world will always be beautiful, it will always be magical. But the world you were growing up in is so different from the world I knew. The ocean has more water, the sky has more storms, the land has more fire. I want you to know how much has changed, so you can see how much there is to cherish. I want you to cherish the fireflies who light the night sky and the birds who sing to welcome the morning. I want you to cherish the wind that tickles your cheek and the rainbow that peeks out from behind the clouds. Cherish the breeze that cools you on hot days. Cherish the trees that protect you from the wind. Cherish the sunshine and remember it during storms. All this beauty, all this magic is yours. You belong to it, and it belongs to you. Take better care of it than anyone ever has. The world will never stop changing, but you will change it too. You won't do it alone. We'll build a whole new world together. A world where we share each other's joy and carry each other through pain. A world where we care for our planet the same way we care for each other. There will be less you and I and more we. We'll build a world where we take the magic we have and use it to make more. And this is the author's note. I wrote this book for my nephew, who was born in 2018 in the throes of climate chaos. He now knows me as his crunchy environmentalist aunt, who buys him books about animals and forests and oceans. He doesn't know that each time I have bought him a book, I have wondered how many of these beautiful beings and places would still exist by the time he was old enough to question the world around him. What answers would I have? Especially in a world in unimaginable transition, we have to make good on our collective responsibility to the next generation. Whether you are a parent or an aunt or uncle, or a teacher or cousin or neighbor, these children need all of us, and we need them. Climate change is real, and it is here, but all is not lost. We're not too late. We're just in time to build a new world with our children. The world isn't ending, it's beginning again, and we get to shape it. Kamala and Maya's big idea. You know what should be out there? Kamala asked her sister Maya. Us, said Maya. A slide, said Kamala. And a swing, Maya added. A playground, they shouted together. Kamala and Maya had an idea. It was a very good idea and a very big idea. They were going to need help. Wouldn't it be great if there was a playground in the courtyard? Maya said. That does sound nice, Mommy agreed. How can we make that happen? Kamala asked. Well, I suppose the first step would be to ask the landlord, the person who owns the building. So Kamala wrote a letter and Maya drew a picture, and they went to see the landlord to discuss their idea. The landlord thought about it for less than a second. I don't think so, no. That was not the answer they wanted, but they weren't ready to give up. That night, the sisters tried to think of ways to turn a no into a yes. They asked the other kids in the building if they wanted a playground in the courtyard. Did they? Of course they did, and they had ideas too. Let's have a teeter-totter and a basketball hoop and flowers. So Kamala wrote a longer letter, and they went to see the landlord again. Dear landlord, right now the courtyard of our building is empty and no one uses it. If there were swings, kids could fly high. If there was a sandbox, kids could build. If there was a slide, kids could go so far, so fast. Can you build it, please? The landlord thought about it for less than 5 seconds. Well, a project this big is expensive. We don't have the money for that. Do your parents know you're here? This was not the answer they wanted, but Kamala was not ready to give up. If we ask our parents and do it ourselves, can we fix up the courtyard? The landlord thought about that for a whole 10 seconds. Finally, he shrugged. Well, if you can do it yourselves, sure. This wasn't exactly the answer they wanted, but it was a start. The kids all spoke to their parents about their ideas for the courtyard. They hung up posters and knocked on neighbors' doors. But they got the same answer from everyone. I'm sorry. Wow, that is a big job. Wish I could help. Which they knew meant no, no, no. But then Mr. Green stopped to talk. Well, I work construction, and I could maybe get some scrap lumber and some sand for a sandbox. Really? Kamala said. Yes, exclaimed Maya. Okay, I'll try. It wasn't a yes, but right now, maybe, was the sweetest word they had ever heard. Maybe gave them hope. The next weekend, maybe turned into yes. The kids all helped measure, and Mr. Green cut the boards. Then they sanded and hammered and sanded some more. Then came the actual sand. They were all thanking Mr. Green when Ms. Lopez stopped to talk. I work at a garage. Maybe they have an extra tire for a teeter-totter. Another maybe. In the weeks that followed, lots of I don't knows turned into maybes and then yeses. No one could do everything, but everyone could do something. Kamala and Maya wanted everyone to celebrate the new playground, so they made another big poster inviting their neighbors to a potluck party. There were hot dogs and hummus, spicy chicken and potato salad, strawberries and brownies and lemonade. Mrs. Flores set up a sprinkler for the kids to run through. Mr. Green brought the music. Kamala admired the new playground, but she noticed there was still one thing missing. No one knew how to make a slide, but Miss Flores knew where they might buy one. Well, I teach at Emerson Elementary, and they are redoing their playground. Maybe we could buy the old slide. This was a different kind of maybe, a how can we afford that maybe. But now everyone was trying to find a way to turn that maybe into a yes. These brownies are delicious. Maybe we could have a bake sale. We can all bring toys and books and have a sidewalk sale. No one could do everything, but everyone could contribute something. When the slide arrived at last, Maya and Kamala got the first ride. The landlord was impressed. I want to shake your hands, girls, he said. You did a good job. You all did a good job. Kamala and Maya had an idea. It was a very good idea and a very big idea. And with a lot of help, they made it happen. Hooray for Kamala and Maya! Hooray for the Persisters! What's next, Kamala? Kamala, looking up, said, I'm wondering what the view is from the roof. And this book was written by Mina Harris, who is related to Kamala Harris. And this is in the back of the book. Growing up, I loved hearing stories about and seeing old pictures of my mom, Maya Harris, and Aunt Kamala Harris as young girls in the 1970s. There's one picture in particular of my mom and aunt that I love. My mom is the one in the bandana, my aunt in the bell-bottom jeans, and they're staring at the camera with fierce determination. They look like they've just conquered the world. That's how I perceived them when I was younger. As I've gotten older, it's only become more true. They would go on to achieve great things, both as public interest lawyers, dedicated to improving their communities. They always made sure I knew I could do anything too. A specific anecdote from their childhood always stuck with me. How they worked together to turn the unused courtyard in their apartment building into an area for kids to play. It was an early lesson in the power of organizing and an example of what my grandmother, Shamala Harris, a scientist and civil rights activist, always reminded us. Each of us has a part to play, no matter how small. By the time I had two daughters myself, I knew I had to write a book inspired by that story. This picture book is based on those events, but it incorporates fictional characters and details that draw on my own imaginative interpretation of what happened. I wanted to memorialize it not only for my girls, but also for children across the world. I was so lucky to grow up with such strong female role models, my grandmother, my mother, and my aunt. I hope this book inspires a new generation of activists to know that they can be effective agents of change if they think creatively, engage their communities, and never, ever give up. To find treasure in the mountains. If you want to find treasure in the mountains, you don't need a magical fairy or a wise wand-waving wizard. You don't even need a pan to shift for gold or a pirate map with X marking the spot. All you need to find treasure here is a sturdy pair of shoes and to remember which way is away and which way is home. Once your sturdy shoes are on tight and your which ways are set right, start stepping toward away. Down that trail, you'll find treasure, and they're inside a tree. This trail leads there too. All steps into the wild lead to treasure. Listen to the Steller's Jay screech. Place your hand on the rough red bark of the great evergreen and hear the wind whisper. Treasure! Oh, now there's a nest. She sees a nest with three eggs. The path can twist and dip and, whoa, it's okay. Even seasoned treasure seekers sometimes stumble. And he just tumbled off of a log. Plus, when you're down with the wildflowers and pine needles, you can go eye to eye with grasshoppers. Eye to eye with a grasshopper, you'll be very close to treasure. Watch the tiny ant carry a tremendous twig on its back. You, too, are stronger than you appear. The doe leaps over the creek. The creek trickling beneath burbles. Treasure! Sit so still, the painted lady butterfly believes your ear is a flower petal. The lizard's blue belly soaks up sunlight like sapphires. Soak up sunshine with the lizard. Trace the glitter lines up and up along the granite. You see, this treasure is bigger than boulders. There are slick spots and steep steps and hard-to-reach places. But you can be as brave as a black bear and as steady as a mountain lion. Test your footing, trust your strength, and try and try and yes. Now, open your eyes even wider, like the great gray owl, and turn your head to look up and down and all around. You've found treasure. It is all treasure. Treasure it. Now, remember which way is home? Step toward home. You say you want to keep the treasure? You will. And here's the inspiration for that book. I was 6 years old visiting my aunt's cabin when I first stepped on a winding trail through the woods. It was a long time ago, yet I remember it with perfect precision. I felt like Alice in Wonderland and Dorothy in Oz, but I didn't need a rabbit hole or a tornado. The trail was a real-world portal to enchantment. It still is. I carry, folded between the pages of my notebook, a beloved Mary Oliver quote, "Inside the river, there is an unfinished story, and you are somewhere in it." I've felt this connection since that first twisting trail. Nature jolts us into the joy of the moment. We're revived by the soapy scent of a Fresnia bloom, refreshed by a mountain's face changing with the sunset, dazzled by dewdrops like diamonds on spider webs. Each marvel feels like finding a gold coin on the ground, but better. And it's not just the poets who know. Doctors and other scientists study and share the benefits of time outdoors. Architects use the power of biophilia, the comfort we feel in nature, when they place plant life in their plans for schools and other buildings. Being in the open air makes us happier, healthier, and kinder. So let's get outside and find a moment to treasure. Okay, I'm going to finish up the first half hour of today's program with a picture book titled The World Is Awaiting You. Dedicated to you and every difference maker, the world is awaiting. Happy day. You are here at last, the start of something new. Say a hello. Get ready to go. The world is awaiting you. The world is awaiting your face, your eyes and nose and chin. Embrace your own hue, your style and do. Welcome the self you're in. The world is awaiting your mind to roam and wish and know. Think your own thoughts, your whys and why nots. Choose an idea to grow. The world is awaiting your hands to wave and make and mend. Discover a need. Do a good deed. What kindness can you lend? The world is awaiting your feet on a bike or trail or street. Go anywhere new. Widen your view. What wonder will you meet? The world is awaiting your voice to speak and dance and sing. Cast your own vote. Play your own note. What message will you bring? The world is awaiting the story that's yours to plot and pen. The world is awaiting your courage to fuel your how and when. If things get hard, as things will do, and trouble shows its face, the world is awaiting your stop and rest to give yourself some space. The world is awaiting your heart to feel and guide and tend. Offer compassion. Be thoughtful in action. Who will you befriend? The world is awaiting your spirit to shine and hum and thrive. Follow your fun on your journey begun. What makes you come alive? The world is awaiting your love to keep and hold and share. Be who you are. Help others go far. Lead and listen with care. Now is your bright beginning. to think and feel and do. Make your own mark. Believe in your spark. The world is awaiting you. And this is just a reminder. My name is Andy Bombeck, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for about 6 months, titled The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Darcy believes in love at first sight. She spent her whole life waiting for that perfect, magical moment. But right now, her life is anything but perfect. After a music festival, she's stranded at a bus station until morning, the day before she leaves for college. Her phone is dead, she has no cash, and she's convinced nothing good can come of this night. But then she meets Russell. Russell, cute and nice, funny and kind. This is the moment and the guy she's been waiting for. And they have until sunrise to walk and talk and connect. Over the course of this one fateful night, filled with football field picnics, night swimming, and escape artist dogs, Darcy and Russell's lives will change forever. They'll discuss things they never imagined about each other and about themselves. But can you really know someone after only a handful of hours? Is it possible to fall in love in just one day? And is it worth saying hello when you know you're destined for a goodbye? Okay, last week, as Darcy was leaving the mansion, the dog Andy escaped. When she returned him, Chloe talked her into spending the night at the mansion. Darcy learns that Chloe sent the dog out because she saw Darcy crying in the driveway when she was talking to her mom. Darcy can't believe Noah Wiley's three ex-wives and their kids all get along when she can't even get along with her dad, who's divorced. And that's where I left off last week. Needing to think about something else for just a moment, I nodded back toward the main house. Do you think Russell will be okay? Is he in big trouble? Chloe grimaced. Russell normally never gets in trouble. He's the kid Wiley worries about the least. Not like Montana. She and Wiley could probably have a fight in shorthand by this point. But Russell and Wiley? No, it's new to them. I bet they're not having a fun conversation right now. She tucked her hair behind her ears. Something happened at the festival, right before Wiley's set. I saw the two of them arguing. And then, after, she sighed, I don't know what happened, but they were both upset. And then we couldn't find Russell. He disappeared. He texted Connor that he wasn't coming back with us, and he was going to L.A. on his own. But we didn't know how or where he was. Wiley was not happy. But he also refused to tell us what they were fighting about. I nodded, thinking back to the times that Russell had alluded to the friend he'd come to Silverspun with, the one who he'd been fighting with, who was, it turned out, his dad. And then, a few hours ago, Chloe went on, Connor got another text from him. He said that he was okay and not to worry, that things were good with him, with like 8 smiley faces. That did not go over well on our end, let me tell you. But then, soon after that, Russell was calling Wiley and saying he was about to be arrested and needed help. She pushed herself off the counter and shrugged. So all in all, I'd say they have some things to work out. I turned this all over in my mind, realizing Russell must have texted Connor while I was in the bathroom at the Silver Standard. Russell had texted his brother, told him things were good, text a row of smiley faces, because he was happy, because of me, because things had been going so well. It wasn't real, Dee Dee reminded me. It was real, Katie insisted. Maybe the details were a little fudged. But everything that mattered was true, and you know it. I suddenly wished that Russell would have told me the truth, so I could have known everything real about him, and he wouldn't have felt the need to keep any of it from me. I could have actually known about his parents, his step-parents, his half-siblings, this crazy circus life, what it had been like to grow up like this, and if he played any instruments, and if his dad liked his fun facts as much as I had, the real him. Chloe finished her chocolate and clapped her hands together. "So, let's get you settled in." She walked out of the kitchen, and I grabbed my sparkling water and hurried after her, pulling my canvas bag over my shoulder. "Everything should be stocked," she said as she walked down the hallway, which was dotted with framed photographs on both sides. Central Park at night, the Brooklyn Bridge, Russell. I stopped short and took a step closer to the photograph on the wall. Russell was standing on a New York sidewalk. He was wearing a suit, a dark jacket and pants, white shirt, no tie, his hair sharply parted. He looked so handsome it took my breath away. He was in profile, looking up at something. It seemed like maybe he was underneath a Broadway marquee. He looked so happy, just suffused with joy. And I realized that I recognized it. It was how he looked for a lot of tonight, when we'd been happy together. "Darcy." "Yeah," I called back. I pulled myself away from the picture and continued down the hallway, past a framed poster of the famous Simon and Garfunkel concert in Central Park. "Bathroom," Chloe said, opening a door and flipping on a light switch. "There should be everything you need in there, towels, products, hair dryer." She walked to the door just off the bathroom and opened it. "You can take whichever bedroom you want. They both should have sheets." She turned on the light and groaned. The room was bigger than my bedroom back home. Upholstered, headboard, fluffy-looking gray divot cover, an explosion of pillows, and right in the middle of the bed, taking up most of it, was Tidbit. He looked up at us with his huge eyes unimpressed, like he was wondering just why we were disturbing him. "Tidbit," Chloe sounded exasperated. "What are you doing here?" "How did he even get in?" "He can open doors," she said with a sigh. "He does it with his head. He was probably trying to escape Artie. He keeps trying to ride him." She looks back down the hallway toward the house. "I should probably go investigate, actually. Are you okay?" "I'm great. Thank you so much." "Come back to the house when you're settled," she said, then gave me a smile. "Or not. You might have had more than enough of us for one night. You're welcome either way." She turned to the dog. "Tidbit, come." Tidbit didn't even raise his head, just snuggled more deeply into the divot. "Maybe take the other bedroom? It's like trying to move a boulder." Okay, do I need to do anything?" Chloe shook her head. "He'll let himself out when he wants to leave." She leaned over the bed and rubbed his ears. "You weirdo." She straightened up and headed out of the room. "I'll leave you to it," she said, giving my arm a quick squeeze as she passed me. "Thank you again," I called, even though I knew it was inadequate for everything that had just been handed to me. "Sure," she called back to me. "See you in a bit." "Uh-huh," I replied, figuring that this was easier than telling her that I was planning on locking the door and staying here for the rest of the night. Even though I would have liked to have tried Praia's pasta. And I was still curious about what fishbowl actually was. But to go back up to the main house would be to risk running into Russell. Chloe stepped out the front door, giving me a wave as she went. I kicked off my sandals and dropped my canvas bag next to them. And then, feeling like I had been in these clothes for far too long, I stepped out of my jean shorts and pulled off my Nighthawk sweatshirt and tank top. I tossed them onto the bed next to Tidbit, who seemed affronted by all of this. I smiled at him, then headed into the bathroom. I felt like I could cry as I looked around, the bright white tiles, the sunken tub and glassed-in shower. The very idea that I was back to indoor plumbing felt like a miracle. The bathroom was stocked with fancy products, the kind I'd seen on influencers' social media, but had never tried out myself. I treated myself to them now, though, taking a long, hot shower. I washed my hair and then just stood under the warm water, eyes closed, until I felt something in my shoulders loosen, my neck unwind, like my body at last understood that I didn't have to stay on guard anymore, that I could finally set down some of what I'd been carrying. There was a gray, fluffy robe on the back of the door, and I wrapped myself in it. Chloe had been right. The bathroom was stocked with everything I could have needed: brushes, combs, moisturizers. I took the opportunity to dry my hair. I felt I needed to after letting it dry slowly with pool water in it for the last few hours. When my hair was dry and I felt like I was fit for civilization again, I headed back into the bedroom, feeling lighter and calmer than I had in days. I'd seen if there was a phone charger in this house. There had to be one somewhere, and then I'd text Katie in her dorm at Scripps. I knew she'd still be up, and I wanted to go through all this with her. Dee Dee would be upset. I knew that she hadn't been looped in, but she went to Colgate, and it was very late on the East Coast, and maybe Bella would have brought my duffel, and I could change into my pajamas. They were creased and dusty, but it was still miles better than sleeping in my clothes at a bus station. I stopped in the doorway of the bedroom and looked around. My sandals were still there, and my canvas bag. The dog was still there, but my clothes had disappeared. Chapter 12, Sunday, 11:30 p.m. I just stared for a second at the empty spot on the bed. I knew I'd taken a long shower, but it hadn't been that long. What could have happened to my clothes? I gave Tidbit a look, but he just rolled over onto his side. He couldn't have eaten them, could he? But maybe he'd hidden them somewhere. This was a dog that was capable of opening doors, after all. And he was the size of a small subcompact. I felt like I shouldn't rule anything out. Tidbit, I ventured. He raised his head slightly. Did you? The giant dog just looked at me. Implacable, then set his head back down with a sigh. Okay, never mind, as you were. I checked the other bedroom, but the clothes weren't there either. Walking down the hallway to the kitchen, I told myself there had to be some explanation. And as I looked around, I spotted a note written in a curly, loopy hand propped up against the snack basket. I hurried over to it and picked it up. Hi, Darcy. So Bella got your things from the driveway, but everything was kind of all dusty, so we're washing your stuff. Left you something to wear on the couch. Fishbowl at 11:30. Don't be late. Chloe. I looked down at the note, wondering why I was even surprised. Every time I'd set something down at this house, it had been whisked away by someone. I leaned over the couch and saw, neatly folded, a pair of sweatpants and a cashmere sweater. The sweatpants looked new. Wiley for the win was written down the right leg. This was his Vegas residency, the one my dad had been so opposed to seeing. The cashmere sweater, though, I had a feeling, was Chloe's. I picked it up carefully. It was a light camel color and maybe the softest thing I'd ever felt. Washing my clothes was a really nice gesture, as was leaving me these, but I couldn't help wishing they'd just dropped my stuff off and left me alone, because now it felt like a ball had just been tossed into my court. I traced my finger over the word fishbowl. Somehow, knowing there was a time attached made this all so much harder to ignore, and made it impossible to just keep hiding out here like I'd planned on. Would Russell think it was weirder if I was staying in my guest house all night, refusing to come out? Or if I was playing some sort of game with his family members? And would it be too strange for him to see me back there again with his family, after he'd already had what I was assuming was a hard talk with his dad? You might not even see him, Dee Dee pointed out, ever logical. He might have gone to bed. It's late. It was late, and yet I was wide awake and hungry. The chips had only seemed to make me hungrier. The tacos that Russell and I had eaten on the football field felt like a whole other lifetime ago, and I had blown my hair out. Before I could talk myself out of it, I grabbed the clothes from the couch and then hurried into the bathroom to change. I had assumed that Tidbit would stay where he was. He had barely moved at all since I'd been in the guest house. But as soon as I opened the door, I heard the sound of paws hitting the floor, and then the dog came walking down the hallway, his head level with the bottom of the picture frames. "Oh," I said, blinking at him. I honestly wasn't sure I would ever get used to being around a dog this big. "Are you coming too?" He leaned his head against me, and as I gave him a tentative scratch on the forehead, he closed his eyes like he liked it. When I stopped, he just opened his eyes and looked at me, and I laughed and scratched behind his ears. This time, "Okay," I said, as I headed over to the door. "Shall we?" Now that he had decided to come, I was actually pretty glad, because while Chloe had been clear that he could open doors, she hadn't said anything about his ability to close them. We crossed the lawn to the house together, the giant dog padding next to me like an honor guard. I stepped in through the glass door, and Tidbit shook himself, a full body shake, then headed in the direction of his water bowl in the kitchen. I pulled the door shut behind me, since the last thing I wanted was for Andy to get out and for it to be all my fault, then looked around. There was no longer the full crowd that had been here when Chloe and I had breezed through. There was just Montana sitting on top of one of the kitchen islands with a glass of wine bent over her phone, and Connor, Sydney, and Wallace all sprawled on the couch. The TV was now showing some kind of medieval set video game that Sydney and Wallace were playing, while Connor read a book. I was relieved that there weren't quite so many people here now, and that the three-year-old had, hopefully, gone back to bed. But most important, neither Russell or Wiley was anywhere to be seen. "No, no, 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 you absolute bellend!" Wallace yelled as he tossed his controller onto the giant Ottoman coffee table. "Don't swear at my wife," Connor said vaguely, turning a page in his book. "I'm fine," Sydney said, grinning. "I'm better than fine, because I just destroyed Wallace's grain holdings and his dwarf fled his shire. Connor looked up and frowned. Explain this game to me again? And it doesn't count if he's British swearing, Wallace explained, leaning back against the couch cushions. Everyone knows that. I feel like your wife is taking advantage of my distracted state. Alyssa will call when she's free, Wallace, Sydney said. He sighed, then nodded at the television. Go again? Darcy, Montana looked up from her phone and smiled at me. You're here. Oh, yay. Are you playing fishbowl? We're never going to play fishbowl, Wallace grumbled from the couch. I've given up even hoping. It's like waiting for fishbowl over here. We've had the game set up for literal hours, but no, we had to stop and eat pasta first. Do you want any? Montana asked me as she pushed herself off the island. She headed toward what I thought was a cabinet until she pulled it open and I realized it was actually a refrigerator, just in disguise for some reason. Sure, I said, feeling my stomach rumble again. That would be great. Priya will be so happy, Montana said as she pulled a glass container out of the fridge. She hates when there's leftovers. She always sees it as an indictment of her cooking, even when she's made enough to feed an army. She pulled down a bowl, then looked back toward the couch. Anyone else still hungry? I'm good, Sydney said as she picked up her controller. Apparently, she and Wallace were going to play another round. Hey, Darcy, get settled, okay? Yeah, I said, glancing back toward the guest house. Everything is pretty amazing. It's so nice of you guys to let me stay. And Chloe, gave me her clothes. Montana laughed. She does that. I think it's just a loan, though, until mine get clean. Wanna play? Sydney asked, holding up her controller. I could use some real competition. Hey, Wallace said, sounding wounded. I'm okay, I called to her, but thanks. I looked over at Montana, who was bustling around the kitchen. Can I do anything to help? Just relax, she said, pulling out a container of Parmesan and sprinkling some of it over the pasta. Tell me about yourself. Oh, my mind was suddenly a blank. Why was it whenever anyone asked you something like that, you couldn't think of anything? Like when someone wanted to know your top five movies, you suddenly couldn't remember any movie you'd ever seen. Or when you were asked to name a celebrity and all you could come up with was Steve Guttenberg. Montana put the bowl of pasta in what was apparently a microwave. It looked like another cabinet. Why was everything in this kitchen pretending it was just a cabinet? Where are you from? Oh, Los Angeles. So you know Russell from school? She took a sip of wine. No, we met in a bus station. Montana's eyes got wide. Oh. A moment later, I'd heard how that sounded. I was at Silverspun, too, I added hurriedly, so she wouldn't think some weird Nevada drifter had wandered into their home. And then, after the festival, we were both stranded. At least, I was. Oh, when he disappeared? Montana said, nodding. He went to a bus station? So weird. Russell went to a bus station? Connor asked, wandering up to us, carrying his book and a wine glass. That's a choice. He reached for the bottle of white that was on the other island and poured himself a refill. I glanced at the book he'd set down, The Last Holdfast by C.B. McAllister. It was a thick hardcover that looked like a fantasy novel. No, I said quickly. We were both on the bus from the festival to L.A., but then it broke down. So we were stuck at the station, and we ended up walking around and talking. We were only in the bus station by accident. Gotcha, Connor said as the microwave beeped. He wandered away with his novel and his wine, and Montana set the bull down on the island. She pulled up one of the stools, then gestured for me to do the same, placing a fork and a striped linen napkin in front of me. "Thank you so much," I said, sitting on the stool and picking up my fork. I took a bite, then another. Whatever modifications the sauce had undergone were worth it. The spiciness had been tamped down, and it was really good. "Wow, that's so cool," Montana said with a sigh as she picked up her glass. "So the two of you in the middle of nowhere, by happenstance, meeting like that, it's like something out of a movie." I nodded as I concentrated on my pasta, keeping my face averted. Just because my romantic delusion bubble had been popped tonight didn't mean I had to wreck Montana's. "I mean, it just seems really romantic." Then she looked at me and raised an eyebrow. "Or not?" I couldn't help but laugh at her expression. "So nakedly interested. I mean," I said, turning my fork between my fingers, "I was very aware I was saying this to Russell's sister. Russell is really great, but..." "Not interested," Montana finished with a knowing nod. "I get it. Is it the hair?" "I keep telling him to cut it. I don't want him to make Wallace's mistakes." "Wait, what?" Wallace called, not looking away from the game, where a very violent battle seemed to be taking place in front of a rain-swept castle. "I have a girlfriend." "I'll have you know. She lives in Hawaii," Montana pointed out. "Well, she's still my girlfriend." "No," I said quickly, lowering my voice so that hopefully this would just be between me and Montana. I was suddenly seeing a downfall to open-plan houses. "I mean, we were, I liked him." "Liked, past tense?" Montana asked, as she took a sip of her wine, her eyes above the glass, not leaving mine. And unfortunately, this is where I'm going to have to stop today because we are out of time. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. And I want to say hi to all the listeners out there. And I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with the novel, The Ballad of Darcy and Russell. Until then, I hope everyone has a great afternoon and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.